afternoon, America. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Today is... What is today?
This is the 4th of May.
It is a wonderful day, and it's May the 4th, 2005. And we welcome you here. And first of all, we want to honor our veterans, those who have served in our great nation in many of the various offenses we've been involved in, and we're so very proud of you and thankful. Would the veterans stand, please? Uh-huh. Our current military. Thank you so very much, and we are grateful for all your service, your commitment to us. Today we must get through a lot of bills because for those who may not know what we're now under is a deadline. And tomorrow will be our last day that we can accept bills that have been proposed from the House. So that's why we're having this meeting today to get caught up on what we didn't get done yesterday morning. And then in the morning we'll hustle through, we hope, a number of other ones that have been possibly in some other committees as well and haven't been heard yet. We have excellent bills. And today when I was comparing what we do with other states, thanks to the good feed-in of Dr. Stembridge, our good administrator, and certainly his assistant, Aaron Seiler, I think we've done a good job for our veterans and our current military. And but I see, you know, various states have various types of benefits and various packages, and we'll continue, I'm sure, through the interim to look at those and say, you know, was there one certain area that we needed to work harder in that we possibly didn't get covered the way it should be. But our goal has been to secure your future just like you've secured ours, and we're very grateful, to you. And we've been working to do the very best we can in this with this great committee. All right. Up first today, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2677.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2677 creates an Oregon National Guard life insurance reimbursement program to reimburse members of the Oregon National Guard for premiums they paid for federal service members' group life insurance. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund to the program, declares an emergency, takes effect July 1st, 2005. You have the one amendment from Representative Boquist, which extends the eligibility to military reserves. You have the -2 amendment from your committee staff that makes eligibility for premium reimbursement retroactive to September 11th, 2001. And the -3 simply combine the -2 with the -1. I have extra copies of the amendments if anyone needs them.
Yeah. Vice Chair over here would like them, and I would too.
You need the,
I don't know why.
Thank you.
Three is what we want to do.
Three is what we want.
Okay, so I just need the 300.
I only have the ones.
You have the ones.
I do have the ones.
Three is what we want.
It is my understanding.
You got enough space there?
Okay. Are we all together now? But I don't have some of your. Okay. Everybody should have -1, okay. 2, and 3. Everybody should have 1, 2, and 3.
Doctor, you got a 2.
Okay. Yeah. I need 1.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, now, does everybody have the -1, 2, and 3?
Here they are, right here.
Well, that explains it. Okay.
Yeah, right. And okay. 3 is nothing more than 1. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Under this provision of this House Bill 2677, the state will reimburse the Oregon National Guard soldiers and reserves, if we adopt the amendment, who pay premiums under the Federal Service Members Group Life Insurance Program that allows service members the option to buy life insurance through payroll deduction. The current premium is $16.25 a month for the full $250,000 in coverage. House Bill 2677 does not provide for payment of the premium directly, but sets up a fund and reimbursement program. The intent of House Bill 2677 is to provide the full $250,000 in death benefits to every federally deployed Oregon National Guard soldier or reservist. And I will give credit because I'm sponsoring the New Mexico flag that will be out front in honor of my mother. But a recent news article did credit New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson with a proposal to pick up the tab for the full $250,000 life insurance policy for that state's National Guard soldiers called to active duty. For that, we commend the good governor. And that's what we're here for. And I would ask at this time if there's anyone here to give public testimony. Mr. McDonald. Welcome, for the record.
Thank you, ma'am. My name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. I just want to bring up a question. This is basically a death gratuity for those killed overseas or killed while in active duty. Shouldn't we also include those veterans that have joined the regular service from the state of Oregon? They die just as easily as a reservist or a National Guardsman. They get the same pay as a reservist and a National Guardsman when they're on active duty. Now, if you want to include just up to E5 or something like that, that's fine. But E5s and below can get have to use food stamps. They can't really afford it. Maybe we should consider those people that have a home record in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Is there discussion? Mr. McDonald, did you bring that up before?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Anyone else? Colonel Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. I just want to bring to the committee's awareness again that we don't have any visibility on reservists. It's going to be problematic to execute what the committee wants if they add the reservists in. With respect to home of record, got another problem because a good number of our people live in other states across the border from the Oregon National Guard, either in Washington, in Idaho, and in some cases Nevada and California, on our border towns where we have armories. So that is problematic as well. Just want to make sure the committee is aware of that.
Thank you. Representative Boquist?
Sure, just a point. If they're a member, under the present bill, the way it's written, if they're a member of the Oregon National Guard, it doesn't matter what state of residence they're in.
That's correct.
And who administers it?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you. The federal supplemental that you talked about whenever we last heard this bill that is coming, that would, when and if that is to pass, that would include active duty reserve and guard from any state, correct?
Now, Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that's correct. It will push it up to all reservists and all members of the military. I think, in essence, what we're talking about here is for the state to pick up the $16.25 a month charge that the federal government charges for this coverage. And that's where it becomes one thing for us to do with our membership, who we have databases on, membership data and all this sort of thing, but we don't have that on reservists, whether they be Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force Reserve, Coast Guard. It's a whole different population that we don't typically deal with. So it isn't impossible to do that, but it's going to add some administrative costs that we're going to have to look at, and we have not factored that into this.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
The 1.2 to 1.5 million estimate that you suggested or our committee administrator suggested at our last hearing, that would be just for the Guard. That would, any additional reservists onto that or others would.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that's correct. That's correct.
Any other questions? Any other discussion?
Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel Caldwell. I will now accept a motion to accept the Dash 3 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2677.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the Dash 3 is adopted. To the motion, Representative Farr.
Yes, Madam Chair, I recommend that we move House Bill 2677 as amended to the, to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Farr has moved House Bill 2677 with the Dash 3 adopted amendment to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Yes.
Representative
Brown. Aye.
Representative Clark.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Tom.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
With unanimous vote, House Bill 2677, as amended with the Dash 3 amendment, will be passed on to Ways and Means. And thank you, members of the committee, and Mr. McDonald, we will pursue further information on how we could possibly enlarge this. At this time, we best take what we got, this bird in hand, and move forward. Be sure we even get this bill out. And but thank you very much on behalf of all the other veterans. Thank you. I will now open a public hearing and work session. Do we have both?
Yes.
On House Bill 2700.
Madam Chair, we started a public hearing yesterday, and we didn't get very far through it. So, yes, I would think a work session would be what you want.
Yeah.
And House Bill 2700 is the bill we have been working on. There has been some additional activity in the last few hours on this. The original bill directs the Director of Veterans Affairs to establish a Veterans Service Officer Expansion Program and allocates from the general fund a blank amount to do the program. I believe that the amendments that are now in play are the Dash 3, the near consensus amendments from the committee staff. I'd be happy to go through those. It better be better if I went through them section by section. If you want to, they replace the measure. They include a number of compromise positions. The Dash 4s represent the position of the County Veteran Service Officers, same as Dash 3, except that it removes the certification program. It appropriates $5 million instead of $2 million, and it removes the statement on potential harm to veterans from switching from veterans to veterans benefits from other benefits. The Dash 5s, which you have a copy of, I believe, come through Representative Boquist from the Director of Veterans Affairs. I haven't had the chance to look over those because while I was starting to look over those, the Dash 6s came in from Representative Hunt, which I'm told have a change on the dollar amount that would be allocated. My understanding is that the Dash 5s are quite a bit different from the Dash 3s and the Dash 4s.
Well, thank you for that very unclear, confusing summary for which you're responsible. Only you. Good Administrator Stembridge. That's what happens when you get a doctorate in geography instead of veteranology.
Do we have anyone who's going to testify?
We do. And we did have a committee list last time, and we got to the first two. And look how efficient he is. See, when you get those Nikes, it really helps. Okay. I believe we were to Mr. Riley and Mr. Hill, or either... both here? Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. May it please the chair and the committee. For the record, my name is Joseph Riley. I'm the Wayne County Veterans Service Officer.
My name is Doug McKeldin. I'm here representing Jeff Hill. I'm a Veterans Service Officer.
Excuse me. McElvin?
McElvin.
McElvin.
Right. Madam Chair, I'm representing Jeff Hill. I'm a veteran service officer from Washington County, and he was required to attend a county budget meeting.
Oh, dear.
Coming to his place.
I think this would be more fun.
I believe so.
Would you mind to turn that microphone right over in front of your... There you go. That'll help a lot. Well, welcome. And is it McElvin?
Yes, it is,
and your first name?
Doug.
I'm sorry?
Doug.
Douglas. Doug.
Right.
I should remember that. I was married to one. Okay. How quickly we forget. All right. Please go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've submitted to the clerk a summary of my testimony. I understand that the committee is facing some strict deadlines, so I think to a large extent I'll rely on the written materials. I would just like to highlight a couple of points. One clarification on the summary that the good doctor presented was that the language in the dash 4 concerning the adverse impacts, I believe it's section 2, at the bottom of the page of the dash 4, well, of the dash 3. The way that section is written refers to adverse impacts on benefits. And many times when we achieve veterans' benefits for an individual, other benefits that that person may be receiving are adversely impacted. For example, if they're receiving $144 in food stamps, but they then receive $850 or $847 for VA pension, they lose that eligibility for food stamps. So what the dash 4 language attempts to accomplish is that we will work with the other benefit experts, the Social Security caseworkers, the Medicaid caseworkers, to make sure that receipt of veterans benefits as a whole does not adversely impact the individual, as opposed to looking at each individual benefit program. So that's one difference in the dash 4 from dash 3 and dash 5 amendments. Another concern that we have...
Mr. Riley, do you understand why that was put in here? I mean, we had testimony to this issue, and it related to the fact that if we have a veteran, in fact, if he wants to live in Las Vegas, that's fine with me. We ought to, you know, the benefits ought to follow the veteran, not vice versa. For example, if a veteran's family lived near, Roseburg, for example, and he could live at a Roseburg convalescent home or one of the family units like we have now, the condo units there, on Medicare, that we should allow him to do that if that's what he wanted to do. Because of his VA benefits also, that would allow him to live in a very nice place in Portland. We do not want that veteran moved out of where he wants to be, staying on Medicare, just because we would give this much money back to the state and move him away from his family or old buddies or friends. In fact, we will not do it. We won't even pass this bill if that required us to do that. Do you understand why that's in there?
I just
want to be sure, because I don't think you were here when all these issues came up.
I was not, but I think I do understand the concern, Madam Chair.
So that's why I don't think it hurts anybody. We just want to make sure that, everybody that's aboard now, because they'll pass it on to their successor, understands that. That has been the most serious issue in this entire bill. And we just won't move them. And not to belabor an issue, but I just had this happen in my county, where out of the clear blue sky, a rest home was closed down. The Medicaid patients were just going to have to live somewhere else other than Sheridan, Oregon. And I called Gary Weeks, the head of Health and Human Services here, and he helped me stop it. I mean, it was so wrong. No consideration for these seniors who'd paid their property taxes, taken care of us. I'm not even sure any of them were veterans, but the fact was they shouldn't have had that happen to them. And they didn't, ultimately. It all worked out. But that's why that's there.
I understand.
Okay. Just want to make sure you understood where we came from when that was drafted. Representative Farr.
Joby, I'm wondering if maybe it's not, if you don't really understand where the committee is on this issue, because I think that your problem is with the language, isn't it? I mean, aren't you concerned about the legality of coordination of benefits?
Well,
so, I mean, I'm seeing some other county veterans service officers shaking their heads. So maybe we just need to all be on the same page, so to speak, with what the intent is.
Maybe it needs to say, does not adversely impact the veteran. And now that.
That, I think, is what we...
change it. We just want to be sure that the decisions were made. And, you know, those that have power of attorney, that's one I really worry about, you know. We certainly want to be sure that nothing's going to adversely impact them. I know you would, and Diane, and, you know, would. Just happens sometimes there's an individual that just might not understand how serious we are about this. So we have to write it in there.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair. And our concern is whether we will be able to develop expertise in every possible benefit area, as opposed to working with the experts that are already involved with the veteran, the Medicaid caseworker, and making sure that the interplay does not adversely affect the veteran as a whole, as opposed to whether Medicaid dollars might be reduced somewhat, but in the big picture, the veteran or the dependent spouse or whomever is in a better situation overall. And so when adverse impact is tied to benefit as opposed to the individual, I think that could cause some confusion.
Madam Chair,
Representative Farr.
I think that we're talking about the same thing. We're just defining it differently. I think, does anyone on the committee believe that that wasn't the committee's intent?
Well, number one, the program shall include, that whole thing needs to be rewritten, the insurance that the receipt of veterans' benefits or aid does not adversely impact the veteran or his or her other benefits or aid that he or she or their spouse or dependent may receive or be eligible to receive. That's how it should read, right? Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Okay, on with it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another concern is the language in the various amendments regarding state certification.
Yes.
We've presented a number of written materials which detail the current accreditation process that county veterans officers must undergo in order to officially represent a veteran before the Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal agency from where most of these benefits flow. The Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal agency, has established by regulation requirements for individuals to be accredited. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has contracted with the federal Department of Veterans Affairs to gain the power to set requirements for the individuals, test the individuals, accredit the individuals, ensure that they maintain a high level of competency, and also the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is expressly given the power to remove accreditation under the contract that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has with the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. And so adding another layer of state certification on top of this extensive federal accreditation requirement, we think would be duplicating efforts that we're already undergoing and may not be necessary.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'd like one more point. The association is pleased that we now have a joint committee for training and education between the department and the association. In our last training, which was last week in Salem, there's a basics course presented for new service officers with a reference binder as reference material they could keep. And I think we're on the right track. And there is, as I say, the cooperative and joint effort now between the two groups. And we're pleased with that.
And Madam Chair, would, after the committee's review of the submitted materials concerning this contract, I'm not sure if that was made, if the committee was made aware of that previously, but if there could be any input from the committee on ways that the County Veterans Service Officer Association and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs could work in better concert in the future, that would certainly be appreciated. We have developed this joint training committee, but I think there's still a lot of work that we can do together to satisfy the federal requirements and make sure that everyone practicing in this area as a county veteran service officer maintains a high level of competency.
Do you have a copy of the Dash 3 amendment?
I do, Madam Chair.
If you look at Section 2, and I thought the same thing when I worked through that this amendment. Section 2, line 5, if it said the Director of Veterans Affairs and, you know, oh, I hate to say ODVA because then I have to give a dollar to that fund back there. You know, if you use an acronym, at least. Cost me $20 one day. But anyway, if that thing that's abbreviated, that association that's abbreviated for the veterans, others from the veterans, and together with the county service, county veteran service
officer.
If that said together with them, shall develop a program that will include the convict, the conduct of outreach. That's A. Do you see that?
Yes, Chair.
Line 9. The conduct of outreach and providing veterans and their spouses and dependents with information and assistance. And then down to line 18, the program shall also include the development and offering of information materials and training for the veterans officers. C, the development of a comprehensive and coordinated statewide network and the insurance of about the benefits that we just went over. And finally, on the next page, line 3, the facilitation of coordination of computer systems and programs to ensure that a current data bank and a seamless transfer of information is available. That's everybody working together. It's not one person saying, this is what you will be doing. Isn't that what you want?
Madam Chair.
Because we're all in it together.
I couldn't
one
agree
without
with
the
you
other
more.
Isn't.
Now,
beneficial.
I'm not an expert in state constitutional law or rulemaking delegation authority. I think there were some concerns about those areas when discussing the power that could be given to a non-state entity. But when we're talking about establishing a program versus rulemaking, there may be greater latitude that the committee and the legislature has. So whatever's permissible under the law that could memorialize the intent of the committee that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the County Veteran Service Officers work together for the benefit of our veterans by ensuring competent service officers, I'm not sure anybody in the room would object to that, Your Honor.
Madam Chair, I certainly know that Jeff Hill supports the joint effort between the two groups, certainly.
Well, I think that's the way it's got to be.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then how are y'all on Section 4 on page 2 on this formula? You know, to me, this is kind of a one-time event where this is going to be developed. Where it says the Director of Veterans Affairs shall adopt by rule a formula to distribute to county governing bodies funds appropriated to the director to enhance and expand the services provided by these officers. And this should not be limited to, and this is next page, number of veterans residing in each county, a base amount to be distributed equally among the counties. That's a new one from the previous amendment. The next one's also new. Retention of amount not to exceed 6% of the total amount. I don't know where that came from. And line 10 is also new, the criteria for withholding funds from a county governing body. Did you discuss these items? Have y'all discussed that section?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And what did you have to say about it?
Well, our concerns are set forth in the Dash 4 amendment, and the only change in Section 4, if I recall correctly, is on the dash 3 at line 13 and 14, removing other individuals providing similar services from sub 2 sub A. And our concern with that is many faceted.
Well, that's all news. That whole section there, starting with line 11 through to 21, the page three, that's new to this amendment. Okay, go ahead.
Well, Madam Chair, we certainly understand that the committee may want to give guidance in the rulemaking process, and overall, except for the other individuals' language, we think it's certainly language we can live with. The other individuals, our concerns there is that the original intent of going through this process was to expand county veteran services. Opening the door to other individuals may create a situation where the state is further subsidizing some of the national service organizations which provide veteran service officers. For the most part, they're stationed at the regional office in Portland, Oregon. And so veterans across the state theoretically have access to them, but the actual access, many times they use their county veteran service officers for the local contact. And so we would like to maintain the focus on expanding the county veteran service office. Additionally, there are some loose cannons out there who purport themselves to be veteran service officers, and they contact veterans or speak with veterans that may not be completely in their own faculties and typically require some kind of compensation for these services, which by law they're not entitled to. And so our concern would be that this could open the door for them to say, well, we should get some of this money. We should be trained as well. And that may just make these people even more dangerous.
Well, the problem here is that we have no criteria, as I know, for determining the qualifications to be a county service veteran officer. We said that had to be defined to begin with, and we don't have it.
Well, the county veteran service officers are appointed under an Oregon revised statute at 408.410, which is referred to in Section 10 of all the amendments except for Dash 5. So there is that statutory criteria. And then we can also fall back on the accreditation process that county veteran service officers must undergo under the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs auspices in order to officially represent a veteran before the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. So there's the state statute as well as the federal accreditation process. And the federal accreditation process is limited to county veteran service officers. Where the power for ODVA to accredit individuals is limited to those county veteran service officers working at least 1,000 hours a year.
And Madam Chair, the national service organizations would have their own agreements with the federal VA about training, I believe.
Our final concern is the funding level set forth in Dash 3. I think this committee's taken extensive testimony regarding the need for county veteran service officers, as well as the basis by which the $5 million was originally conceded. And that's looking at how the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has decided to staff their office, which serves Marion and Polk counties. Divided out among the veteran population in those counties, it was determined that $5 million would be needed to raise the other county veteran service officers to that same staffing level. And it's not just a self-serving reference to say, well, let's look at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Part of the written materials is a document which sets forth the VA recoveries, the compensation and pension benefits paid into each county. And what I think is important to notice there is that for Marion County, although I think there's 25 or 27,000 veterans, there are only a couple hundred thousand dollars less than the recoveries that are paid into Lane County, which has 35,000 veterans. So per capita, the recoveries in Marion County are far greater than any other county. And I'm confident and hopeful that with similar staffing levels, with all of them going through the federal accreditation process, that we can achieve those kinds of per capita recoveries for our veterans in all of the counties and not just Marion County.
Madam Chair, last August there was a Veterans Summit with many groups present, and the very first draft of the bill, which I helped put together, the basis of it was trying to raise the staff levels in the 34 counties up to the staffing levels in Marion and Polk counties. That was much of the discussion that whole day meeting last August, was to try to bring everybody up to the ODVA levels.
Okay. Any questions of these two fine men?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I...
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you. Two questions, if I might. One, you focused on a whole variety of issues in your testimony. Am I correct in understanding that each of those issues, that you're satisfied with the language in the Dash 4 amendments of how they address each of those issues?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, frankly, I think if we were starting this process today and drafting this, we may have some different language. Mm-hmm. But all of our major concerns are addressed in Dash 4 and then Dash 6, which is similar, but for the reduction in the funding level of $3.5 million. I think that each of those amendments address all our major concerns, and we would be quite pleased to see either of those come out of this committee.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. And in looking at the potential of having $5 million of resources invested across the state, do you see a scenario in any county where it might be, with its proportion of money, it might be oversubscribed in terms of the needs of veterans in those counties with that amount of money?
Well, the original way, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Pye, the original way that figure was obtained was by looking at the population of Marion and Polk County and the staffing levels therein. So less populous counties would receive fewer dollars, with a minimum set where I think every county would be assured at least a quarter-time veteran service officer. So, you know, looking at the numbers that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has been able to achieve for their veterans, I don't think that that amount of funding would result in overstaffing in any county.
Any other questions? Representative Farr.
Madam Chair, is it possible, since we do have to move this bill as amended, whichever amendments we propose to adopt, onto Ways and Means, is it possible that further amendments can be done while the bill is at Ways and Means?
It would be my desire that that would be done before it leaves this committee, if an amendment is required. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, just one point on would any county receive 20 funds. Last August, that was discussed in some detail, and I don't think that would happen under the funding formula, but there might be cases where if a county was to get 6/7 of a service officer, it didn't make sense. I mean, the veteran population will grow, and so the funding will allow for a full-time position, somebody to have a real job. But I don't think you could say that anyone in 34 counties is going to be staffed with the people who aren't busy all the time. And that was a concern last August, how to work this out.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll call...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, is it Jeff? A.J.F. Bodenweiser? Oh, well, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. McDonald. Too bad.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. And the first question that has to come up is, what is best for veterans? Nothing else, as far as I'm concerned, matters. I went over these changes last night, 4 or 5 hours, and one change changes one way, and another change changes it back. I'd like to point out a couple of things. The one person responsible for veterans in this state is the Director of Veterans Affairs. And I think we're micromanaging his job. When we're telling him what he can do and what he cannot do, were tying his hands. I think the $2 and $5 million figure that's come up should have an accountability for what it's for and should be spelled out. One thing this bill does not do is cover national or state veteran service officers. If we have a program that's going to give a certain amount of money to certain people, all veteran service officers, national, state, and county should be put together in that formula. We should not discriminate against anyone. And I know for a fact that the national service officers in the Portland area have people from all over the state come to them. If they can't get what they're after from a veteran, county veteran service officer, that's where they end up.
Mr. McDonald, aren't they being paid by the federal government?
We, the state also helps them. No, ma'am, they're being paid by...
They don't get paid at all by the federal government.
No, ma'am, they're paid by, for instance, the Department of Veterans of... the Veterans of Foreign Wars pays theirs with some money coming from the state. So if you have a formula, we should include them in it. I'm glad to see that Senate Bill number 10 didn't fly because they wanted the county veteran service officers to be under the Department of Administrative Services, which was immediately shot down by the Department of Administrative Services. If we're going to make Mr. Willis responsible in this state for veterans, we cannot tie his hands. We have bills that pass this legislature dealing with state issues for veterans. State certification for veteran service officers, I think, is necessary yearly to make sure they stay up to date. I think training for them is needed yearly, at least yearly, so they stay up and are current with what's going on. I think in this bill, any place that says county veteran service officer, the word county should be stricken, and I think that ORS 408-410 in this bill, any place that is mentioned should also be stricken. A veteran service officer, I don't care where he comes from, is a veteran service officer and should be treated equally. But the main point I want to make is, if you hold someone responsible, please do not tie his hands and force him to do things that maybe through time will change. Remember, flexibility is the key to success. If you tie one's hands, he can't be flexible.
Mr. McDonald, could you tell me what you're referring to? Because I have no clue in this bill, and I've read them all.
Okay.
Where we've tied the director's hands.
Well, when you're directing him to do things for county veteran service officers, and time may change things, and you're still directing him to do it, he should have the flexibility to do what he thinks is right. If something happens and something goes wrong, who are you going to hold responsible? You're going to hold responsible Mr. Willis.
Okay, give me an example of what you're talking about in this bill. Are you talking about the certification program? Are you talking about him
getting 6%? I'm talking about when you direct the Oregon Director of Veterans Affairs to do something with county veteran service officers, what you're doing is really tying his hands and not letting him manage veterans affairs. That's what he's paid for. But if you direct him to do things with them and the circumstances aren't such that that's the way it should be because time has changed something, you've tied his hands.
Okay, Paula Brown, would you come? First, Paula. Could you come forward?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I ask a question of Record Administrator?
Representative Farr, you may.
Was Senate Bill 10 amended to change the purview to the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Madam Chair and Representative Farr, it's my understanding that Senate Bill 10 has been changed so that it looks very similar to House Bill 2700 in its original form. That is, the it It has a $5 million allocation that House Bill 2700 doesn't have, but the money would go through the Director of Veterans Affairs. The Department of Administrative Services was amended out of Senate Bill 10. Senate Bill 10 is currently in the Ways and Means Committee.
I testified on that to do that, if that's what you wanted to know. Okay. Good. Welcome. Good. Paula Brown from the ODVA. That's a nickel.
Nickel.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I should say that Director Willis had planned to be here. However, I had some other commitments, including attending the memorial service for the fallen soldier. I'd be happy to answer the question. Did you want me to?
My question is, in this bill, is there anything that, you know, where we're tying the hands of the Director of the Department of Veteran Affairs?
In taking a look at the bill, Madam Chair and members of the committee, there are some items that would create some concern for us and could be construed as tying the director's hands. Perhaps some examples of those in the language may be, or the discussion that's been occurring is the involvement of non-governmental agencies in delegating that authority to non-governmental agencies to come up with a certification program or to come up with the testing requirements. Another would be the distribution of the funds. When it's indicated how the funds are going to be distributed, if it's a base amount, those could probably be construed as tying the hands of the director.
Okay. Do I need to go? Okay. Thank you. Okay, anything else, Mr. McDonald?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Next to testify, Burlton Burns, is it? From Multnomah County. Welcome, Mr. Burns. Is Brad Witt here? I don't think so.
He testified, yes.
Yeah. Welcome, good Mr. Burns.
Madam Chair, committee, my name is Fulton Burns. I'm a member of the advisory board of the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs, and I'm from Multnomah County.
Well, what do you think of House Bill 2700?
I would like to see the funding sources increase for county veteran services officers. I would also like to... Rather, it's gotten kind of confusing.
I agree.
But I do feel is the need to increase the funding for the county veteran services officers, and I do feel as though there's a large need to make sure that there is a standardization among the veteran service officers, so that veterans are entitled to the best representation that the state of Oregon can provide.
Mr. Burns, how many veterans do you think you handle in a year?
Madam Chair, I would not venture a guess.
Okay.
I know that there are a huge numbers of veterans throughout the state of Oregon that are seeing various people during the course of the year, but I would not try to take a guess as to how many. But I know the numbers are large.
All right. Well, we appreciate all you do for our veterans. Are there any questions of Mr. Burns? Thank you very much caring to and being here. We appreciate it. Okay, and I believe, is there anyone here? I have Kevin O'Reilly. Mr. Burns, would you move one of those chairs so to facilitate his motorcade?
Chair
Chair Nelson, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Kevin O'Reilly. I am here today representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans, and I would like to speak to the ever-contentious House Bill 2700.
Could you straighten it out?
Well, no, ma'am.
No, I shouldn't do that. What kind of veteran are you?
A very poor one at the moment. I would like to address the certification, state certification for the veteran service officers. As you've heard, we have county-level veteran service officers, state veteran service officers, and some of the nonprofit veteran service organizations also receive state funding for their veteran service officers. Our parent organization, the Paralyzed Veterans of America, has a veteran service officer in Portland. This veteran service officer does not receive state funding. I make that point so that you know I have no vested, my organization has no vested interest, financial interest in House Bill 2700. However, we do have a vested interest in ensuring that veterans receive good quality service from veteran service officers, whether they be national, state, or county. As such, we would like to see them, particularly the national service officers, who might not know what benefits are available to the state. They should receive training. They should receive a certification for that training. The same with the state veteran service officers as well as the county veteran service officers. The second point I'd like to make is they all receive state funds. If you're going to receive state funds, it might be a good idea to be certified by the state. We certify teachers. We can certify veteran service officers.
That's a very good point.
And other than that, good luck with this bill.
Mr. O'Reilly, don't you leave us now.
Oh. If I may answer any questions, I'll be more than happy to try.
Do you know why the Paralyzed Veterans Association doesn't receive money from the state?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Well, we're going to find
out. Under the circumstances, I'm kind of glad they don't.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll stay out of here.
All right. It may be possible that they do, and may also be that we have such a small number of veterans in the state. We only number around 400 or so.
Well, to me, that's a substantial amount.
Well, it is to us, too. Nationwide, we have over 21,000, but in the state. Let me collect my thought here for a moment. Oh, something we had thought of. I was talking with some of the guys the other day, and it occurred to us that with federal accreditation, you have to have X number of hours. I believe I heard 1,000 hours in a year. If a disabled veteran who, due to his disability, isn't able to work 1,000 hours in a year, but other than that, he's qualified to be a veteran service officer, he wouldn't be able to receive state funds as a county-level veteran service officer. If one of the counties wanted to hire him, they couldn't. They couldn't afford to pay him. With the state certification program written into this bill, he could get paid, and that would be a benefit to that veteran. That's hopefully other veterans.
Very good point.
Finally, something good about this bill.
Yes.
Myself.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. O'Reilly? Thank you very much,
Thank
and we always
so
appreciate your advice, and we always listen to you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2700? Any discussion?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Brown, I'd like to
come forward, Paula.
I think she feels she was just here to answer questions before.
Mm-hmm. It's not the one I got from her boss in her written. No, we're not going to hear the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to testify on House Bill 2700. In taking a look at the various amendments to 2700, the department would support the Dash 5 amendments. House Bill 2700 will really do more than just expand one component of a system that delivers services to veterans, their families, and survivors. With the Dash 5 amendments, House Bill 2700 will create a system that bases veteran service officer performance on real-world standards, knowledge, skill, and service outcomes. This bill will ensure for the future that a veteran or a veteran's family anywhere in Oregon can trust that the veteran service officer they contact will be and remain competent to give them good advice and file a quality claim for veterans' benefits, and when necessary, file and present an appeal, all of which could positively affect the quality of life of the veteran and the veteran's family. Should the state decide to expend these general fund dollars to assist veterans and their families, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs will be accountable for the successful use of those funds in serving Oregon's veteran community. The department requests your assistance in providing the tools necessary to do that. This includes the statutory language that would ensure that state funds are used for the intended purpose of serving veterans and are not used to supplant other funds. A state certification program to certify veteran service officers to ensure the same standard of excellence for providing services to veterans and their families, no matter where in the state they seek that assistance of a certified veteran service officer. Veterans and their families will receive the assistance of a certified veteran service officer for the purposes intended, including but not limited to applying for federal, state, and local benefits, no matter where they live in Oregon. And that veterans and their families are afforded the protection that when they receive the assistance of a certified veteran service officer, that these same certified veteran service officers, acting as their advocates, will ensure that the receipt of veterans' benefits or aid does not adversely affect or impact the other benefits and aid that the veteran or his family is receiving. House Bill 2700 with the Dash 5 amendments is about providing a system of service delivery to veterans, their dependents, and survivors that provides them with the services they need at a standard of excellence that they deserve no matter where they live. The Dash 5 amendments provide the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs with the tools to allow the department to successfully carry out this charge. I would say that there are just a couple of things with the Dash 5 amendments that may be considered by the committee. One of those would address the issue brought up by Kevin O'Reilly with paralyzed veterans. On page 2 under section 3, the Director of Veterans Affairs may establish a rule, by rule, a certification program to ensure the competency of veteran service officers with the removal of who receives state funds. What that would do is allow the veteran service officers, whether they're receiving state funds or not, to be certified by the state in order to provide good quality service to veterans. That concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Val, would you like to speak on this bill?
I would. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Val Conley. I'm the administrator of our Veterans Services Division, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I spent 8 years as the manager of our Portland Claims Office. In our Portland Claims Office, we receive 90 to 95% of the claims work that is done by the county Veterans Service Officers. And I can tell you there is not standardization throughout the counties based on quality and quantity of work done that is in the counties. So I would like to see a certification process in place so that every county has the same level of service. And another thing I wanted to say is that PVA receives no state funds because they haven't applied. But we would welcome them to do that.
Okay, good. Well, let's get busy, Kevin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I might just clarify, in case my testimony wasn't clear, that we would want the national service officers, the state benefits counselors or service officers, and the counties all included, so that all of the available veteran service officers receive the same training, certification, and funding for delivering quality service to veterans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Dash 5 is significantly different than several of the other amendments we're looking at, isn't it? And if I'm reading it correctly, and I may not be, it establishes a much more centralized program than it either exists now or appear to be contemplated in the threes, fours, or sixes.
Madam Chair,
would that be an accurate statement?
Representative Barnhart, I'm afraid I don't follow you on that one as far as centralization. The Dash 5 amendments don't change where the veteran service officers are located.
I'm not referring to that. I'm talking about how they're organized and who they work for and that kind of thing.
With the Dash 5 amendments, the county veteran service officers would continue to be county employees.
Any other questions? Okay, I'd like now thank you very much, Valen Follicall and Jacqueline Zimmer. I'm sorry, I am having difficulty hearing today, so y'all got to forgive me, but shout!
I'm sorry, I defer to Joseph, I'd like to
appreciate
it.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you for giving us this opportunity to address some of the issues that were raised by the other presenters. In the Dash 4 amendment at Section 4, Sub 2, Sub A, and that is on page 2 at line 22, that section discusses the training that the director shall make available to veteran service officers. That veteran service officer reference is not limited to county veteran service officers, and we would welcome all service officers in the states who want to deliver services at a high level to be allowed to participate and to have those training costs help subsidize by the 6% that the director can withhold from the county disbursements so that people like American Legion, disabled American veterans, can be part of our training conferences. Historically, that's not always been the case. Last week when we had our training conference, we invited a couple of the national service officers, and many of them have been doing this for much longer than many of the county veteran service officers or the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs officers, so there's a real wealth of knowledge there that we could be able to tap into. So the Dash 4 and Dash 6, as they're written, would allow all veteran service officers to be trained by the director and the program which he or she establishes. The concerns about standardization among the various counties and the levels of competency, there's currently a mechanism in place to address that, and that's the power granted to the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs by the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs to accredit individuals.
Where is that statement? Can you provide it to us?
I have your, Madam Chair. It was part of my written material.
Oh, it was today?
Yes, ma'am. The procedure is set forth at 38 CFR 14.629, and that procedure...
Mr. McElvin says... Information, is that
yes, ma'am.
What you're talking about that was in his? Okay.
The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs submitted to the what was then known as the District Council, now known as the Regional Council of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, a proposed contract granting the director authority to accredit county veteran service officers who meet the requirements set forth in the federal regulation. It's also my understanding that they submitted the actual test questions that they would test the veteran service officers with, and with some minor changes, that contract and those test questions were approved as set forth in the District Council's response of November 23, 1990, which is also attached. So there is a mechanism in place to ensure competency. The director is given the power to pull accreditation if the county veteran service officer does not meet the high standards of the director. It's a very broad power, a very broad statement, and so I would suggest that the director has this power, and if the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has any concerns, that there's a mechanism in place to already address these issues.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Madam Chair, if I may, just two last things. Lane County has not formally taken a position on House Bill 2700. I meant to preface all my remarks by that statement. I'm not speaking on behalf of Lane County, my testimony now or previously, and I'm sorry if I gave that impression.
Are you not the county veteran service officer from Lane County?
I am.
How can you not be speaking for them?
Well, since they have not granted me that authority, I do not have that power to speak for Lane County.
Did they give you authority to speak to each veteran, name by name?
No, Madam Chair.
You're worrying me.
I'm sorry. What I'm trying to convey is the fact that by my statements here, Lane County is not making these statements. Joseph Riley is making these statements, at most representing the views of the Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Finally,
and when I speak, I'm not representing the whole legislature either.
Madam Chair,
boy, howdy.
Thank you very much. All right, and at this time, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2700.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, and we will go to House Bill 2737.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2737 creates an Oregon Military Family Relief Program within the military department. It funds the program through a charitable checkoff on the Oregon personal income tax return forms. It establishes the purpose of the program to write grants to members of immediate families of federally activated National Guard and Reserve members, as well as to demobilize members of the Oregon National Guard. The -2 amendment that you have from Representative Barnhart limits military reserve beneficiaries to residents of Oregon. It authorizes loans as well as grants. It clarifies the beneficiaries of the fund may include the spouse, child, or dependent of military member. It defines dependent. It deletes the minimum 30-day federal active duty prerequisite. And it also has the provision that rotates eligible entities onto Oregon's personal income tax return.
Is that all?
Did I do all of that?
We stand at ease for just a moment, please, while we get our papers together. I do, too, and I don't know why.
Madam Chair, do we have a fiscal?
Right.
I'm not seeing a fiscal impact on this one.
This one goes to business following
the business
this.
Madam Chair, I don't see evidence that we've asked for a fiscal on this one. That doesn't mean we haven't, but we don't track it in that fashion.
For the
one question that we had that came up was, did this include regular driver's license? And from Department of Transportation was here, you recall?
Right.
And we said, no, it meant when that was their occupation, if they were, you know, driving trucks or delivering express mail, a livelihood for which using a vehicle, you know, actually rendered income, their livelihood. So I have to direct us to Ways and Means or Revenue?
Business.
It's a business referral, no?
I know. That's business. And then from them to revenue, I guess. Is that why it didn't say Ways and Means now? Okay. Entertain a motion to accept the dash two amendment.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Boquist moves the dash two amendment to House Bill 2843. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, dash two is adopted. Sorry.
I want to just ask one, and it's fine, it's a follow-up to that. I want to ask one more question for clarification. The dash two, an individual for 1 year after the individual is released from active military duty, so that's a cap on it, but is there unlimited licenses within that 1 year time frame of release from active duty? I mean, I realize it would be a rare exception where an individual had two, three, four, six.
If he was a fisherman and a trucker, for example, right. He'd have to take care of them both. If he had to have two jobs, yes.
Right.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion then on House Bill 2843, Representative Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2843 as amended. If they do pass, a referral to Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs.
I'm sorry. Representative Boquist, that was done with such enthusiasm. I know that name is so long. I don't know why we don't just call it the Business Committee. It makes me crazy. All right. Representative Boquist has moved House. House Bill 2843. Help me. Yes. Oh, please.
We should have afternoon meeting for
happy hour.
I promise I've never done that, but have I just don't remember. I'm sorry. Oh, dear.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
May I be with you?
Yes. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm better now. Okay.
Would you like us to request that this referral go to Ways and Means rather than the business?
Yes, I would.
We could do a letter for that.
Okay, thank you.
We could make that part of the motion.
Okay.
And I will speak with the Speaker's office, and we'll see if we can move it directly to Ways and Means, since I'm positive it will have a fiscal impact of some amount.
I'm glad Mr. Penhall is here to just vouch. I've never done this before all these years. Okay. Representative Boquist, did you hear that?
I'm amenable and so amended.
Thank you so much. Wow, I really thank you. Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2843 as amended by the Dash 1 Amendment to Ways and Means, and we will not go to that particular business committee, if at all possible, with a letter from the chair here that Dr. Simbridge is going to prepare. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Be very careful what it is.
I will be. Thank you. Because I fully recognize that after I say this, I'm going to be accused for stinking thinking. But,
uh-oh.
Yeah. But I need to say this.
Yes, sir.
Of all the bills that I've had various discussions with veterans and veterans groups, including town halls, including just meetings in my office, this one was about the lowest priority.
Is that right?
It was. And I think there's a lot of good merit to this bill, and I understand, and I think it's good intent. It was just low priority. And my point is, since there are so many things that we are asking for, truly asking for, that are revenue-based, that are truly helpful to veterans this session, I don't want to muddy the water. And so I'm just going on record to let you know, even though I understand and appreciate the intent of this bill, I'm going to vote no.
Thank you, and I'm very sorry to hear that. Okay, is there any other discussion?
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Just to the motion, and I deeply respect two of my colleagues on the far end of the table. the intent here is that we know that we have about 4,000 veterans that came back, and the fiscal in this is going to be very small. What we're trying to address is those individuals that are unemployed or trying to restart their businesses, which, you know, at any time in the next biennium, sort of a general mobilization, we're talking about 1,000, probably about 1,000 individuals. So I don't expect that the fiscal on this is going to be outrageous, and I do expect that if it is outrageous, we know what Ways and Means is going to do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Just to make the stinking bacon bipartisan. I again agree that I think the intent of this is right on. I just think with the limited dollars we've got and the clear needs, especially as we've just heard in terms of the veteran service officers and all the beneficial multiplier effect that brings in terms of federal resources, in terms of educational benefits, I'm just worried if we send it down to Ways and Means that they may pick this one off and not do one of the other ones that I think we probably believe and we've heard from veterans actually are higher priorities. So for that reason, I'll be a no on this as well.
Okay. I just want to briefly just go through these because I understand maybe where some of you are coming from right now, but I want to just talk about California benefits just for a moment. It says to the veterans, you've earned college tuition fee waiver, and there's a, of course, there are details to each one of these. Disabled veterans business enterprise opportunities, veterans homes of California, property tax exemptions, motor vehicle registration fees waived, disabled veteran license plates, free license plates, veterans claims representation, fishing and hunting licenses, employment and unemployment insurance assistance, farm and home loans, state parks and recreation pass, business license, tax and fee waiver, veterans preference in California civil service examinations. So just to let you know what we've been doing, maybe in different areas, but we're far behind most of the other states in benefits. Now, their business license tax and fee waiver, this one particular one, is a waiver of municipal, county, and state business license fees, taxes, and fees for veterans who hawk, who peddle, or vend any goods, wares, or merchandise owned by the veteran, including sales from a fixed location. Of course, they leave out, you know, intoxicating liquor and spirituous, they call it, malt, vinous items. Who may be eligible? Honorably discharged veterans who engage in sales activities. Bring proof of your honorable discharge to your local appropriate county city licensing authority. So if you wonder where the veteran was coming from who asked for this, this is just one example that it is in place. Okay, is there any other discussion? If not, Aaron, would you call the roll, please? And if you've forgotten where we are, we're on. Where are we? We are on House Bill 2843 with the dash 2 amendment.
Aye.
Representative
Lopez.
Aye.
Yes.
Representative
Bruin.
No.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Representative
Kwong. Aye.
Representative
Farr.
Excused. Chair
Nelson. Aye. House Bill 2843 is the dash 2 amendment. Having been passed by a majority of this committee, will now move on, we hope, to Ways and Means, and I'll be happy to write that letter. Thank you very much. On behalf of the businessmen, in fact, after we heard this, when we first talked about this somewhere, and contacted me on starting their own business and how we could help. So I appreciate those who supported that bill. We are now moving to House Bill 2847. I feel like I'm calling bingo.
Don't go there.
Would you wait just a moment, please, Mr. Stembridge, so get this all together here. We are already listening. Let's just read this.
Dash 2 does that.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2847 requires that the Oregon Veterans Home account be listed in the charitable checkoff program on individual tax return forms. You have the dash 2, which requires all entities eligible for charitable checkoffs to be rotated onto the individual tax return form, and it removes the $50,000 minimum donation. I might say that the Oregon Veterans Home account is currently on the charitable checkoff among the eligible entities. However, it has needed to qualify. And you had a bill that talked about some of the qualification elements that it took to get that into the eligible entities. This would bypass that, and by statute, make the Oregon Veterans Home account listed in the charitable checkoff program.
Okay. During discussion, I'll accept the motion to adopt the dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Bruin.
I move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2847.
Representative Bruin has moved the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2847. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Representative Hunt?
Yeah, actually, just for the same reason, I would love to see the Veterans Home added to form. I object to the process of setting up the rotation for some of the other groups, especially the domestic and sexual violence assistance group, that would take off at least in some years. So I certainly have no objection to putting the Veterans Home on. I just object to the rotation system.
Okay. Is there any other objection?
Madam Chair, I have a question of Dr. Stenbridge.
Yes.
Dr. Stenbridge, have you researched this? And I'm not sure, because, I mean, Representative Kampf and I were talking, because we have a bill similar to this all the way down in revenue. I'm not sure establishing the rotating system, because there are three or four that are mandated already by law, including the one that Representative I'm not sure that this takes three or four that are already mandated by law off.
It does. I met with the Department of Revenue, who's responsible for this, and this was the recommendation of how we could be most fair to all of the nonprofit entities in the state, that this was probably a good way to do it.
And, Madam Chair and Representative Boquist, my understanding of how legislation, it's all, you know, we're all in this quest to understand how legislation works, but my understanding is that that phrase that you see on the first page of the amendment, line 11, where it says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, this is kind of a shortcut that the attorneys can take to say that this overrides whatever other provisions say. So that was my understanding of why this would effectively put all of the entities into a rotating system.
Okay, Representative Kampf.
With that understanding, Chairman Nelson, I'm going to need to stand with Representative Hunt on this. I do have concerns about the number one item that's on that checkoff list, but the item of we are working on other bills to hopefully guarantee the support for our veterans in other areas. And particularly, you know, we're having a bill, you know, we passed, I believe, the bill that states that, you know, we want to bring the home loan project back into action. I have a problem with taking particularly a couple of those top ones off if we start rotating.
Thank you. I believe that we need to bring, forget what her name is, back from the Department of Revenue tomorrow and have her explain this one more time.
Okay.
And so I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2847.
That would be Ms. Buchanan.
Buchanan, was that?
Deborah Buchanan.
Deborah Buchanan, and have her explain it.
Is that 2847?
2847.
2847. Okay.
And have her come so that she can ask. I think we've forgotten what has been said. Now I'll open a work session on House Bill 2933.
Oh. Madam Chair, House Bill 2933 discharges the outstanding income tax liabilities of an active duty military personnel killed in action. It holds outstanding tax liabilities of active duty military personnel in abeyance until 6 months after the active duty ceases, and it takes effect on the 91st day after signee die. you have the dash one amendment, which changes the phrase "kill in action" to the phrase "lost life while serving on active duty," and it makes provisions of the measure retroactive to September 11, 2001. I have extra copies of the dash one if anyone needs it.
Okay. Second point.
Makes the measure retroactive to September 11th, 2001.
Are you sure about that?
I think it does.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if you're ready for a motion.
I am.
I'd be happy to move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2933.
Representative Hutt moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2933. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the dash one is adopted. Representative Hunt.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2933 as amended to the Committee on Revenue with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hunt has moved House Bill 2933 with the dash one adopted amendment to it to the Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Brooks.
Aye.
Representative Clark.
With a due pass, I should have said. Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Clark.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Thank you very much, Aaron. And House Bill 2933 has passed. This is very important. As you know, we have heard of the many difficult situations our veterans have found themselves in with income tax liabilities and the family where someone is lost a life while serving, that even makes it harder. So I think this is the right thing to do. And this week, as we lost one more of our fine men and women in this state, I know this is the right thing to do. Thank you so much. Now we'll be moving to House Bill 2945.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2945, the original bill indexes the amount of property tax exemption for veterans' residences and gross income limitation to change the cost of living. The amendment from Representative Hunt changes property tax exemptions for which disabled veterans qualify for from $8,750 to $15,000. It increases that exemption. It changes the income limitation in order for disabled veterans to be eligible for the exemption from $8,778 and $11,497. It changes those to 185% of the federal poverty guideline. It changes property tax exemptions for which service-connected disabled veterans qualify for from $11,570 to $18,000. It deletes most of the other provisions of the measure, and I believe Representative Hunt could speak.
This House Bill 2945, sponsored by Representative Hunt, is very important. We have a letter here from Jerry Ryan, the president of the Paralyzed Veterans of America, who feels this bill would be very beneficial to those with substantial disabilities who are still in the lower income brackets, and it would help their families and survivors. And they believe tying the yearly cost of living adjustment to the U.S. City Average Consumer Price Index is appropriate. So I wanted you to know that if you did not already. Representative Hunt?
We had the benefit of pulling together a work group that included Representative Boquist and representatives from the Department of Veterans Affairs, Mr. McDonald and Mr. O'Reilly, to kind of pull together the good thoughts from several bills and several organizations, and this was the
the consensus, recognizing it'd be great if we could do even more, if we could exempt even more, but this was a good step in the right direction, and also by tying it to the federal poverty level that automatically adjusts with inflation every year. We hopefully won't have to, this will be one we won't have to come back and do again.
That is good news. Okay, is there any other discussion? Any objection?
I'm sorry, I did not.
I'm sorry, I was thinking you did.
To move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2945. You were just anticipating that.
I was. Representative Hunt has moved that we adopt the Dash 1 to House Bill 2945. Now, is there any discussion, any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Motion, please.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2945 as amended to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt has moved House Bill 2945 as amended by the Dash 1 amendment to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Boquist has promised he will carry
it immediately. All right, Representative Boquist and Representative Kopp, we're counting on y'all. All right, is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative
Clark. She's excused.
Representative
Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Kopp.
Aye.
Representative Brunker.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative
Broom. Aye. Aye. Well, I think this is wonderful, and I certainly hope Kevin is listening and Mr. Ryan with Paralyzed Veterans, and we're working hard for them. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2945 since it has passed unanimously with its Dash 1 amendment. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3096.
Madam Chair, is there someone who can loan me a copy of House Bill 3096?
I'm sure there is.
So that I can tell you what it's about.
There you go. You didn't think I could.
This is one that we added. House Bill 3096 provides an automatic connection to changes in federal income tax law related to taxation of combat zone compensation received by certain members of the armed forces. You may recall that this was included in a bill that did not go through this committee, but it was the Federal Reconnect bill, and there has been some doubt expressed as to whether that bill will be enacted, and therefore this bill was put onto your agenda for consideration.
Thank you very much. Yes, and Representative Hunt spoke to me about this, and I'm certainly hoping that our Reconnect passes for the citizens of this state, because if our tax schedule was reconnected to the federal one, we would pay less taxes. And I'm certainly hoping that it's going to pass, but in case it doesn't, we're at least going to protect the veterans. Well done, Representative Hunt. Is there any discussion regarding House Bill 3096? Any objections? We don't have an amendment. We need a motion, please.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Bruin.
And I'll ask a question before I make the motion. Does this need a subsequent referral to revenue? I'm sure
it does.
Okay, I don't have that sheet.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3096 to the House Revenue Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bruin, who is a co-sponsor with Representative Boquist and Comp, and the primary sponsor, Representative Hunt, of House Bill 3096, has moved House Bill 3096 to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, Aaron, would you call the roll?
Aye.
Representative Comp.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart. Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative
Farr. Excused.
Carry on.
Aye. Thank you very much, committee, and House Bill 3096 has passed. This is a good insurance policy for our veterans so that they get some exclusion for their military combat pay from their Oregon taxable income, because I think that's a logical and right thing to do, and we'll move it, but I hope everybody else gets the federal Reconnect also. Thank you very much. Next, we will be hearing House. joint.
You could go to this one, or if you want to take these two up at the same time.
Okay, we'll be taking House Bill 3325. House Bill 3325. And House.
H.J.R. 47.
And H.J.R. 47 at the same time because they're interconnected regarding the Veterans Home Loan Program.
47.
House Joint Resolution 47 and House Bill
3325.
I'm going to open a work session on both of those.
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill, House Joint Resolution 47 is your proposal to change the Oregon Constitution. It would, upon approval of the voters, of the original bill says that the November 2006 general election amends the Oregon Constitution to modify eligibility for veteran farm and home loans. The dash one from your committee makes active members of the Oregon National Guard and Reserves eligible if they have completed their initial active status obligation. It authorizes refinancing, it clarifies eligibility of veterans' spouse, and it changed the election to the May 2006 primary. Whenever you do a constitutional amendment, you quite often need to have statutes that implement that constitutional amendment, and that's the purpose of House Bill 3325. It modifies the statute portion of the Veterans Home Loan Program, implementing H.J.R. 47, should H.J.R. 47 be approved by voters. Of course, it doesn't go into effect if H.J.R. 47 is not approved by the voters. It implements the refinancing eligibility and other provisions of H.J.R. 47. Again, we have a dash one amendment. It replaces the measure and coordinates House Bill 3325 with H.J.R. 47-1. I have copies of the amendment if people need copies of it.
Yeah, I don't have it either.
I don't want them to have it at all.
I have a draft of it.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
I don't have it.
I don't have a real amendment. Please have this draft.
And I'm running out of copies. Can you
look at it first? I'm going to share it. You look at it.
Sorry, Representative Bolfus, we do have a copy for you now.
He's still going.
Is there an amendment? There's 3325?
Yes. Coming.
He's doing that one too.
Madam Chair,
I've got it.
For sake of discussion, do you want me
I've
to put
it.
A motion on the table?
Yes, sir.
I would move the dash one amendments to H.J.R. 47.
Representative Hunt has moved the dash one amendment to House Joint Resolution 1, which what did I say? Dear goodness. Let me start over.
Dash one to 47.
Erase. Representative Hunt has moved the dash one amendment to House Joint Resolution 47. And it simply states that upon approval by voters at the November 2006 general election, the Oregon Constitution will be modified with some eligibility requirements for veterans, farm, and home loans, and it should substantially help our veterans and their spouses. Is there any discussion?
Well...
Any objection?
Well, Madam Chair, I just received these. And could we have just a moment to read them?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
The only thing I'm concerned about is that at our last meeting, we determined we wanted to put this in the primary, not the general. So in our notes from the committee, I want to be sure that says at the primary.
And actually, Madam Chair, if you look at page 3 of the dash 1.
Does it say that?
Yeah, lines 6 and 7 say the next primary election.
Yeah, it does.
All right, great.
Yeah.
That way maybe we won't have any competition.
And no additional costs.
And no cost. Okay, are there any other questions?
Could somebody remind me why we needed this amendment?
There's someone from here.
You have to have it with the House Bill 3325 to make this make these individuals available?
Madam Chair, I would mention that there was a group put together with the Department of Veterans Affairs who currently write the home loans, and the Department of Justice met together with Legislative Council and set out the major goals of the rewrite and included those all in the Dash 1 amendment.
And Bruce is going to explain it to us.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bruce Shriver. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. HDR 47 in its original form mixed some of the criteria dealing with active duty service and active status service in the National Guard and Reserves. The amendment did was clearly identify the qualifying criteria on the active duty and versus the active status. Where before, had a person had to meet any one of those. Clearly, in this amendment, there's two criteria for each piece: active duty status versus active status criteria.
Thank you. Do we have anybody from Department of Justice who would like to testify on this? I guess not. But you don't want to testify on it. Well, we better take advantage of this. Rarely do we have you in our committee. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, committee, for the record, my name is Dee Carlson. I'm with the Oregon Department of Justice. I represent the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs with some other agencies in the General Counsel Division.
Have you had a chance to review the House Bill 3325 and this House Joint Resolution 47?
Yes, I have.
And legal in all forms, are they?
Yes, they meet the initial needs that we have. I think that we reached an agreement with Mr. Stembridge that Dr. Stembridge, excuse me, that at this juncture we would amend the statutes to the point that the bill does to implement them, and there might be some refinements as we move along in subsequent sessions. But
we certainly don't want to have done anything that would jeopardize our veterans' chance to get their home loans.
No, I think that those changes are consistent with the changes that are here for House Joint Resolution 47-1.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, of course, the one we got to get right is the joint resolution.
That's correct.
Is it right?
Yes, there's one little cleanup, and that's to capitalize the RN reserves. But I understand that can take place.
That's a scrivener's fix, I think. May I ask another?
Yes, please.
Thank you. So this is going to meet what you anticipate the federal rule statute might be in the event they change the statute.
This would accommodate that as well as some other changes. Yes, the principal. Purpose, as Mr. Shriver was indicating, was that at present time this does not accommodate the veterans who have served in the Oregon National Guard or the Reserves who were not called active duty but did complete their initial term of service, and this would now make them qualify for home loans as well.
All right.
It would?
Yes.
It would.
Okay. Now, to get tax-exempt bond financing from the federal government, the Internal Revenue Code will have to change it. But it would allow for funding of that loan program with those state sources that are available.
So, if I could follow up. So, we can use our state money under this measure if it passes. And if we get an Internal Revenue Code change to allow the tax-exempt bonds to be sold, we could do it under that plan as well later. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart. Right now in the bill, House Joint Resolution 47, there's a specific provision, Section 2, subsection 2 of Section 3, or of Section 1. Bruce would know, he's got the bill in front of him, that allows the director to control the source of funds for the individual programs depending upon the qualifications of the specific veteran. So that's taken care of.
Are you satisfied, Representative Barnhart?
Yes, I am. Thank you. One final question, if I may. So all the adjustments that will have to be made to satisfy the norms of New York or London can be made in the law, in the statute, assuming HJR 47 is adopted.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Are you happy, Mark?
I'm happy. I'm just excited.
You didn't tell me the stuff in your teeth.
Yeah.
I apologize. The good administrator provided us with a little candy up here with molasses in it, and it sticks in my teeth together. As long as they don't fall out, I guess. That's what's important. Yes, I would like to offer anybody. To anyone who would like to have them, but remember, they stick your teeth together. If you're going to speak, you don't want to eat it. Yes, Representative Hunt, could you remind me where we were?
We are about to consider the Dash 1 amendments to HJR 47.
Have you made a motion that we accept those?
Yes,
thank you very much. Representative Barnhart, do you understand
happy.
It? You're happy?
I'm happy.
All right. Representative Hunt has moved the Dash 1. If I haven't already said it, I'm saying it again. To House Joint Resolution 47. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Dash 1 is adopted. Representative Hunt.
Madam Chair, I would move that we forward HJR 47 as amended to the Committee on Election and Rules with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt moved House Joint Resolution 47 with the Dash 1 adopted to the Committee on Elections and Rules with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Aaron.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Barnes. Aye.
Representative
Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Thank you very much, committee members. Now to the corresponding twin of House Joint Resolution 47, for which our financial officer of our Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs and a brilliant attorney from the Department of Justice has said we're doing everything right. It ought to be simple to pass. Representative Bruin.
I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3325.
The good Representative Bruin's moved the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3325. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the Dash 1 is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would point out that I think it would be your intention to keep these two measures together. We have a letter giving us approval from the Speaker to send this measure on to Elections and Rules Committee with HJR 47.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stembridge, and we're glad that we got that done earlier, and I signed it only because you brought it to my attention that it needed to be done for us to be efficient, and we're grateful.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Brewer.
I move House Bill 3325 as amended to the House Election Rules Committee with a due adopt recommendation.
Very good. Yes. It's very difficult. You're adopting or passing.
Or whatever. Okay.
Well, I did just the opposite. We didn't adopt House Joint Resolution.
With a positive endorsement.
Okay, let's go back and start over. All right. Representative Brewer has moved House Bill 3325 be adopted or passed with the Dash 1 amendment, and to move forward to the House Committee on Elections and Rules. Is there any objection, any discussion, I mean? Aaron.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Bilkis. Aye.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Tom.
Excused.
Chair Nelson.
Yes, thank you very much. Aye. One, two, three, four, five, six. Okay, thank you very much. Representative Crump and Farb were excused, so House Bill 3325 will, as amended, will go with House Joint Resolution 47 as amended to elections. We will now move to House Joint Resolution 18, House Joint Memorial, let me just give them to you, 14 and 18. 14 and 18. House Joint Memorials. These are four comments.
And do you want to open a work session on one or the other, or please?
I will. And I'll open a work session on House Joint Memorial 14.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 14 urges Congress to fund health care for veterans without increased co-payments and user fees. You discussed this last week on the 26th. We have the Dash 1 amendment, which adds reference to vision, dental, and mental health care. I have copies of the Dash 1 if anyone needs them.
This is 18, right?
Anybody else need a copy of the dash?
No.
Dash 1 to the 18, right?
14.
Dash 1 to the 14.
House Joint Memorial 14.
Madam Chair, can I request permission to vote on that last one?
You sure may.
I'd like to.
I will open a work session on, was it the House Joint Resolution 47
no,
or the
3325.
House Bill 3325 for the purpose of Representative Comp to vote? Is there any objection? If not, how would you vote, Representative Comp?
Aye.
Representative Comp votes aye, and the measure passes 6-0.
Thank you
very much. We are now moved to House Joint Memorial 14. And we needed an amendment because we have been told consistently that the health care for our veterans needs to be increased, but not increased co-payments and user fees, right? We have the good Diane Salenti here, who's the most incredible veteran service officer from my county, and Mike Sullivan's too, I might admit. And she agrees, and that's important to me. Okay, so could I have a motion to accept the Dash 1?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Joint Memorial 14.
Thank you. Representative Bruin has moved the Dash 1 amendment to the House Joint Memorial 14. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the Dash 1 is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 14 as amended to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Bruin has moved House Joint Memorial 14 as amended to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Karen?
Representative Bruin? Aye. Representative Fry? Excused. Representative Hunt? Excused. Representative Tom? Aye. Representative Barker? Aye.
Chair Nelson? Aye. Thank you, committee. House Joint Memorial 14 with the Dash 1 amendment has passed, and I'm sure that the good Representative Darlene Hooley will be happy to see us, as she's been a great supporter of the veterans, and she's urged us to continue these memorials, that they are important regardless of what anyone may say. And we also want to wish her a happy birthday this week while we're on the subject, and thank her for all her work for our veterans.
You need a Karen.
Yes.
Someone to lead the floor debate.
Yes, to lead the debate on the floor. Would you like to carry this one, Representative Barnhart? Rep. Scott, would you like to carry it?
I'd be delighted to, although if you want to. Bill.
That's cool.
I assume you made the motion because you were angling for it. So.
All right.
That's hard to speed the process. One of the two.
I thought he was speeding us up because we have to be out of here by 6.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
It's a law. Uh-huh. We made it just now. Okay, thank you.
Well, let's get moving.
Okay, I'm going to open a work. I'm going to close work session on House Joint Memorial 14. I'm going to open a work session on House Joint Memorial 18. Mr. Sullivan, Mr. McDonald, come forward to testify.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 18 urges Congress to change veterans' health care funding from discretionary entitlement to permanent and direct entitlement. You have an amendment that Mr. Sullivan requested that changes the resolution awarding to urge Congress to change spending on veterans' health care from discretionary spending funded by annual appropriation to direct spending funded by permanent appropriation.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sullivan, thank you so much for this amendment. We're really grateful, and we waited till you could get here.
Madam Chairman and committee members, for the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am a political guy for the Pulp, the Western Pulp Paper Workers in Oregon. And I offered this talking to Dr. Jim here, and he said basically it really just does say the same thing, and it does really say the same thing, but the verbiage that I'm offering is a little bit more strong. That's what in there than what is in there. And what I'd like to say is I would like to keep on line 26 the word mandatory and strike the rest of it. Somewhere between Jim and I'll take the error on that. But I just want to say that it is very difficult for the VA at this point to hire nurses and doctors on an annual appropriation. With the permanent appropriations, they will be able to budget much more germane to the future of what the VA should be. And I think, as I've said before, I think it's ludicrous to fund a war and not fund those that come back wounded and maimed, etc. My deal on that would be like Linfield College, which just won the championship, to say, we won it, and thank you. You ruined your knee, but we have no money to take care of your knee. The season's over.
And find your way home.
I don't think this is responsible government, and I think that this really is the mother lode of all the action this good committee and you, Madam Chairman, have done. It's been 57 years since there's been a committee on veteran affairs, and I know you've done a lot of catch-up work, which is greatly appreciated. And I defer to Mr. McDonald.
Thank you so much. Any questions, Mr. Sullivan?
My name is Matt McDonald, representing Army Veteran. We need to change the word permanent to mandated,
okay,
wherever it is, because that's what's in the federal, the way the federal law reads.
Right.
Permanent to mandated.
May I ask,
yes,
if you can be more specific as to this location in the amendment or the original bill?
Well, in the summary line.
I was looking at the summary line.
Okay.
And there's line 30.
Line 30. Permanent should be mandated.
Well, that would be line 7 of the dash ones.
Oh, line.
Yeah,
right.
Instead of
line 7 dash 1.
And it says permanent, too.
Right.
Madam Chair, I would suggest that because this is a joint memorial, we can take the specific wording here and you can pass it out conceptually because it's not going to affect any law in the state. And we can then order the amendment and take care of the paperwork to follow up, and you won't need to try to revisit this. But I do want to find out specifically what the wording is that you desire.
Okay. Change it to mandated, he said.
And that would be in the amendment on line 7, the word permanent we want to delete, and we want to put in mandated.
That's the way the federal law would read
instead.
That.
Yeah, I made a note of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate it.
Is there any other change that you wish to see? Let me repeat what I see as the change. Is that all right?
Okay.
In the dash 1 amendment to HJM 18 in line 7, we're going to delete the word permanent and replace it with the word mandated.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you change the byline up here, but we need to change our summary.
I'm sure.
Yes,
also
sir.
Found another one since we are going to do this.
Okay.
It goes back to the Merchant Marine line 8. I don't have the amendment. So maybe
Goodness. Okay. Thank you.
In line 8 of the original bill, the printed bill, after guard, we're going to add Merchant Marine.
Yes.
Or we could even do it after the Marine Corps.
And Madam Chair, I think that we will...
Colonel Caldwell's gone now, so he...
I would point out that the summary up above is not part of the measure, so they will change the summary automatically to reflect what the measure says. I don't think we need to worry about that part.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do I have a motion to accept the dash one?
Madam Chair, I'll move that we accept the dash one as conceptually amended.
Ramsey Barnhart has moved that we adopt the dash one as conceptually amended. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? We can't vote. Yes, we can. Oh, thank you.
Don't need to vote.
Yeah, that's right. We do. Now we do.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, are we ready for the next one? Okay. Yeah. Madam Chair, I move...
We adopted the dash one.
House Joint Memorial 18 as amended, conceptually amended, and conceptually amended to the floor with a Dupas recommendation. Yes,
yes,
no?
Sir.
You've looked out the Merchant Marine. Now you need to officially.
I need to say that. Okay.
You need to. Okay. I think you need.
Well,
if you want to include the Merchant Marine, you need to include another change.
Let's say it. Okay.
On a separate motion.
All right, Madam Chair, I would move that we conceptually amend House Joint Memorial 18. By inserting the words Merchant Marine in line 8 after the word guard. Did I get it? Okay.
After the Coast Guard?
Yeah. Might as well. I got
Coast Guard, comma, Merchant
after
Marine,
the Coast
comma.
Guard, comma.
After Coast Guard, comma, Merchant Marine, comma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. R.Z. Barnhart has moved... that we pass House Joint Memorial 18 with a conceptual amendment.
Madam Chair, I don't think
with the dash one conceptually amended.
I think at this point, Madam Chair, that we're still amending the motion. We haven't made any motion to pass it. I think we need to decide officially whether you want to change that Merchant Marine. Put the Merchant Marine there, and all. So you want to?
Okay, all those in favor of including the Merchant Marines in this amendment, signify, and we will now do that. All right.
I now, Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 18 as amended and as conceptually amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart is.
With a due adopt recommendation.
Moved House Joint Memorial 18 with the dash one amendment and the conceptual amendment of including Merchant Marines after the Coast Guard in the main bill to the House floor with a due adopt recommendation. Right. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative
Farr.
Excuse.
Representative
Hunt.
Excused.
Representative
Kong. Excused.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Joint Memorial 18 has passed, and that makes me really happy. We need this done. It does need to be a mandated entitlement. And I agree with Mr. Sullivan. What you do for the war, you should certainly do for the warrior. And we're going to, take care of the funding of the war. We ought to take care of the funding for our warriors and their needs when they, need us. Because they go when we need them. So when they need us, we ought to hop to it. So I'm really glad we've done this. And I'd be happy to go to Washington and take them. And our last bill today is House Joint Memorial 31.
Madam Chair, HJM 31 urges Congress to amend the definition of veteran in federal law to include all soldiers who served on behalf of this nation. I know of no amendments to this one.
This bill is so right and perfect, House Joint Memorial 31, Representative Comp, thank you, unless you want to vote on House Joint Memorial 18, which was unanimous previously. It's so open.
I would appreciate that.
I'm going to close. I haven't even opened it. Going to open it.
Don't get her. Don't start.
Don't look at me.
Okay, I won't.
House Joint Memorial
18. What is the matter with me?
I think I'm just tired. I apologize.
No, it's exhausting.
House Joint Memorial 18. No, don't tell anybody I did this. House Joint Memorial 18 for Representative Compton. Is there any objection to her voting? What would you, how would you, what would you like to say?
I want to vote aye.
Representative Kampfer votes aye on House Joint Memorial 18. So recorded.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. And we're on 33.
Okay. Now I'm going to open the work session. Oh, gosh. House Joint Memorial 31. I haven't done this in years. It's
Madam Chair, am I correct in you? Did you say this was the last one?
This is the last one because we lose our fourth voter. I'll just try to hang on for seven more minutes. Or I break down totally.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 31 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Joint Memorial 31 to the House floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
And could I just say...
Could you just tell us what this says? I want these good men who have been here, these veterans here, these county veteran service officers to know what we are doing, and we're going to change the federal law, we hope.
Well, this is a... As you pointed out, this is a wonderful memorial because it asks the Congress to change the definition of a veteran so that it actually includes all soldiers who served on behalf of the nation rather than just some of them,
right,
like we have now. It's real simple.
Right.
Thank you so much. Is there any other discussion on House Joint Memorial 31? Is Aaron. I am so proud of this. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. What? Oh, good. You started. It's contagious. Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Excuse.
Representative Kampfer.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Aye. This is a wonderful bill, and what a great way to leave today on. I think it's so wonderful that, you know, the individuals who have served, you know, their time are veterans. And for us to make any distinction, I think, was terrible discrimination. And I'm so proud. And thank you, men, for being our model. We're so grateful. Thank you. And there's one woman veteran here right now, so we're grateful, too. Representative Boquist, would you carry this House Joint Memorial?
Yes, ma'am.
31. Thank you. And Representative Comp, would you carry House Joint Memorial 18?
Yes.
Thank you very much. And, lady and gentlemen.
Madam Chair, I don't know what our agenda is for tomorrow.
We meet in the morning at 8:30.
And do we have a full agenda?
Definitely full agenda. So, Representative Barnhart, I'm going to ask that you hold your questions and your remarks to a limited 10.
I just have one thing that I would like to...
Let me just close that work session.
Work session. Thank
okay.
you. I have been informed that an amendment that I think will deal with the issue for House Bill 2737 will be available in the morning at 8:30. And so I would suggest that that be among the items that you carry over.
Thank you. It is indeed carried over. And we have the two bills that we've worried with today that we've got to resolve. And hopefully tomorrow they will be resolved. That's, I'm talking about the 2700 bill. It's definitely one of the first two. So but we will. We do have a full count tomorrow, and thank you very much that we worked hard today, and hopefully we won't have to come again like this. I really don't want to meet on Friday because it's Mother's Day weekend, and I want you men to remember your wives and mothers, and I want us women to enjoy being remembered. So don't make us work on Friday.
I'll make a motion
for that. Oh, good. Representative Kopp, I'll take it. And thank you for bearing with me today. I don't know what happened, but does it feel good to laugh?
We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, 6:30.
6:30.
Yeah.
I asked them that one time. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you so much.
You'll be here.